1-800-449-8686. This is The Phil Hendry Show.
Joining me right now, David G. Hall, Vice President of Syndication for The Phil Hendry Show. David, I know that you wanted to talk to me about show content, and so we'll take a few minutes just to discuss that.
It's not a big thing, but we have, again, Phil, received quite a number of letters from people. They just don't know when you're kidding.
It's just amazing that people at this point don't know what this show is about.
Well, most of the letters are from program directors and general managers of stations that we've tried to get your show on. They're scared. They don't know where they're joking. So we've got a lot of those people listening to your show tonight in the hopes that they will pick up your show.
Program directors of radio stations?
And general managers and vice presidents of programming. They don't get it, and I don't blame them. I mean, what... Are you kidding? Are you not kidding? We don't know whether you're kidding or not.
What are you kidding? Kidding or not? I mean, all right, so what do you want me to do?
All right, so Bud's standing by, and he has the fun horn, so that every time you say something that's a joke, he'll hit the fun horn, and that way these fine gentlemen will know that you're kidding. Okay?
Yeah, okay.
Let me just hang on the line here. First of all, hey, buddy, you there?
Here, right here.
Okay, hit the fun horn. I need a fun horn.
It's the only thing I had. The fun horn broke.
So you got to use a cow?
Yeah, it's the closest to the horn.
The closest to the horn, huh?
I let the kid. He's using his imagination. He's adapting and overcoming. I like that. All right, so hit the fun horn when Phil's kidding, and then, you know, don't when he's not.
So you're letting him decide?
Yes, he's the producer of the, well, he's kind of the, you know, associate producer. We'll let him do it. All right, go ahead. Talk whatever you're going to, you know, talk about. Whatever boring crap you're going to talk about.
Well, thanks for that vote of confidence. Are you going to be there?
Yeah, I'm going to monitor.
Hi, everybody. I'm Phil Hendry. And what are you playing it now for?
Ain't you kidding?
No, I ain't kidding. That's my name.
What are you talking about?
That's my name.
Well, how is he supposed to know?
Because that's my name.
You ain't kidding.
No, man, I ain't kidding. You know, speaking of kidding, a lot of people have said to me, Phil, you're going to get back into radio. Even though you say your last broadcast is June the 23rd, you're going to get back into radio. We know you are. All right? Let me prove to you that I'm not going to get back into radio. Let me just burn every bridge I have right now. I think that the people that run the radio companies of America, the individuals that would be in a position to negotiate with me for a new contract on their networks or with their companies, are the biggest pack of scum-sucking dogs and lowlifes that I have ever met in my life. Play the horn, bud. Play the horn, bud.
Well, keep talking.
He ain't playing the horn.
What?
He's not playing the horn.
Well, you're kidding?
Yes!
He's only kidding, folks.
You know, I might as well just yell out I'm kidding.
Yeah, you could do that, too.
Get out of here, both of you freaks. By the way, speaking of freaks, I took my son. I'm kidding, Nick. Well, you are kind of, well, you're a good guy. I took my son back to school today because he came for, you know, Mother's Day. So we had a very pleasant Mother's Day. We got a dog. We got a dog named Casey. And it's a wild, wild thing, man. So we were messing with the dog yesterday. And anyway, I took Nick back to school this morning. And he's in a frat house. He's in a fraternity. He's going to be a junior next year at USC. And my wife comes back. She says, oh, my God, the toilet bowl that boy's living in, the horrific, scum-ridden, fetid, rank, foul. You know, it's just to hear her talk, he's living in a dumpster. So I take him back to school, and you get off at Hoover there on the freeway, the 10, and you go down toward the Coliseum. Well, the USC fraternity houses, there's an area called Fraternity Row, and you turn down there, and their frat house is right there. Now, it's not the best-looking building in the world, but it's nice. It's like this big converted apartment thing. Now, the good-looking houses are all sororities. Like, the chicks keep their sorority houses just pin neat. Flowers in the front, little picket fence. Even after they've had some wild-ass party, all the beer cans are picked up the next day. You know the fraternity houses, because on Sunday morning, just beer cans everywhere. So I took Nick back. He says, just go down this alley here. We can pull around the back. I go, what, do you want to buy a rock? Because that's what it looks. So we go down this alley, and we get out. Well, I took him in, and it's totally guy heaven. I mean, this place is, you can tell, these are just dudes are living here. He takes me into his room, and with all due respect, it kind of did look a little bit like the barracks in a POW camp or something. There were two of those wooden bunks. And then some guy found a sofa, probably in a dumpster, dragged that in. Another guy found a TV set, dragged that in, wired it up, probably his, you know, his bootleg in the channel or the cable from somebody else. The room next door to his, what have these guys done? They have an outdoor patio setting. You know, now, keep in mind, you know, it's like a horseshoe. So there's the bottom floor of these rooms, and then there's a top floor. And in the middle, what looks like it used to be maybe a basketball court, because there's this kind of half-painted circles, and it looks like there might have been a basketball key there at one time. And I'd say the entire middle sort of quad area here, you know, several thousand square feet. So there's Nick's room with these two bunks, and he goes, yeah, isn't this great? He loves it, man. I mean, that's all he needs. You know, if the guy's happy, you got to be happy. And frankly, when I first moved out, did I ever tell you about my very, 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 very first apartment that I had? It wasn't even an apartment. It was a room that somebody had built off of a garage, and I had to knock on the back door of the house to use the can. So it was like, it was just this room that someone built. So I threw a mattress in there, and I had a hot plate. And I knew there were two chicks. I was rooming with my buddy, and there were two chicks living in the house. So we'd have to knock on the door to use the head in the morning. And otherwise, we'd use the hot plate. And if it was really the middle of the night and you had to go, well, guess what, my friend? There's a few trees up and down the property line there, too. So, you know, everything's good. So I took Nick there, and he says, look, this is really cool. I go, yeah, it is cool. I mean, the room is no bigger than, I mean, it's just, you could pace it off, man. It's like, you know, 8 by 8, 8 by 10, you know, and with a bathroom. And then he's got the sofa that his buddy found in a dumpster. There's the TV set. So everything's good. So I got, I said, this is pretty cool, actually. And he says, yeah, Mom thinks it's a toilet. I said, well, she doesn't get it. It's a frat house, you know. Next door, there's a similar room, but the guys there are a little more creative. They've moved a sofa out in front with a rug, okay, and a little coffee table. And something was hanging from the ceiling that looked to me, it's hanging from the roof, like an eave of the roof. It looked to me like a TV set. And I thought, well, these guys got it going on because it looks like they've wired up some cable outside. I go around, it's not a TV, it's a blinking Miller sign. So these dudes just sit there and hammer beers back on Friday and Saturday night with their Miller sign going, right? So you can well imagine what this place is like on a Saturday. I said, dude, what is this place like on a Saturday night or Saturday? He says, oh, it's fun. And so most of the guys left for the weekend. A lot of the guys, what is this, the middle of May? A lot of these guys are done with their schoolwork, so they've split. He's going to be hanging around because he's got a job down there for the summer. I said, you know what, man, you're going to want to come back home on a weekend. He goes, no, I want to, you know, I got my job and everything. So, yeah, well, guess what the smog's like in downtown L.A. in the summertime? Good luck. Rot's a rock. He goes, boy, you got a point. I said, I guess you need money, too. He goes, yeah, as a matter of fact, what, C-note do? Can't hurt. You got it. You know, I said, I know you got a job, man. I guess you need some dough, though. Well, you know, every little bit, because he's a good guy. You know, so he's, hey, man, do you need some money? Well, no, I got a job coming up, like $100. Well, you know, anything you can, you know, do. So, but what's cool about it is, you know, when you're a guy and you got to intercede on behalf of your son because your wife doesn't get it. You know, the women, oh, my God, is he eating properly? Does he have enough clothing for his? Yes, he's fine. She's never going to understand it. He could sleep naked. He could sleep naked out back because he passed out drunk in a pool of his own vomit and still be okay. He's going to be fine. You know, and tell any mother that. It's just, oh, my God, it's fine. They do it. What do you mean they do it? Well, it happens. What even happened? Well, they had a party and the chicks and the thing and the. What do you mean, chicks? Well, you know what I'm saying. I got they're drinking beer, and a guy's going to maybe have too much, and he's just passed out. Passed out naked? Well, maybe he was in the middle of some kind of a dare. A dare? What I'm saying is he just... So I told Maria, I said, everything's good there. She goes, well, I'm glad you looked at it, because it looked like a toilet bowl to me. I said, no, it's heaven. Are you kidding? It's freaking heaven, man. It's like there's no adults around. So I dropped him off there. So he's doing fine. But you do really have to kind of intercede. You have to say, okay, let me explain to you, honey. When he said that he had to go to Las Vegas and have himself photographed naked in front of the Caesar's Palace, that's because he's rushing the fraternity. But he could get arrested for that. Yes, technically, yes, he could. Yes. But you see, here's why that isn't bad. It's actually a good memory to be arrested naked. Well, not naked, but you just get it, you know. So good luck to you, bro. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show. A reminder, our last broadcast is June the 23rd. A couple of weeks before that, we'll open the lines up to just, you know, folks want to talk, because we've never really done that before in the show, because I really don't like to do that. I like to have a reason for having phone calls on the air. I mean, you know, something that moves the show forward. But you know what? Every now and again, you got to kind of break down, Phil. Quit being such a hard ass. Let people check in and say, hey, we're going to miss you, Phil, if in fact they want to. So we'll do that the final 2 weeks of the show. And we're also going to have our odd flashback day, too. I want to let you know that. We had one last week, and as we pile up these flashbacks that we haven't been able to play, we're going to devote whole shows to flashback shows. Today's the 15th. Our last show is the 23rd. So we got about 6 weeks to go. Or, excuse me, 5 weeks to go before the end of the show. And then just one more quick reminder on our poker tournament, which we're very proud to be sponsoring, the Phil Henry Celebrity No Limit Texas Hold'em Poker Tournament. My friend's place will be the beneficiary. May 27th at the Bicycle Casino, the $200 buy-in, $30 entry fee. Go to www.thebike.com for more information.
Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Henry Show is back, 1-800-449-8686.
We got a flashback by request here, and as I mentioned, as we get closer to our final broadcast, June 23rd, we'll devote whole shows to flashbacks. We did one last week, and there are more to come. This is from James, and James asks, a bit that you played a while back I'd like to hear again. It's Jay Santos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police. He was involved in pulling over kids and searching their cars for meth and other drugs. I want to hear that again. Here it is, James. Jay Santos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police.
My name is Mark Andrews. I'm a youth educator. I've been giving lectures here in Las Vegas for the last 20 years.
Yes, sir.
I've got over 1,200 youth in my group here. And number one, I understand the need for police, but you're not even a real policeman. And for you to, number one, do a body search on a child, That's incredible, man. I've never heard something so bizarre.
Wait a minute. You say I'm not a policeman. We're fully uniformed. We wear a blue armband.
I don't care what armband. You're not a policeman. You're a rent-a-cop at best. And to do what you did to that child, you're lucky they didn't sue you.
Sir, all I did is I dropped a quarter on the ground.
That sounds like a perverted individual, son. A very perverted person. I mean, you drop a quarter and have a young kid to bend over while you've got him undressed?
No, we had a flashlight so we could take a look.
See, that what this man is saying, Mr. Santos, any reasonable person walking by and seeing you toss a quarter, kid bends over with their pants around their ankles.
Exactly.
All right, let me ask them. Their pants are down around their ankles. What are they bending over for? There you go. There you go. We're trying to...
Will you get out of here with that? You're trying to tell me that no reasonable human being is going to look at that and not think there's something screwy going on? And by the way, your son and this girl were in a car. You
right.
detected the smell of marijuana.
Right.
Why didn't you think your son was the individual providing it?
Let me tell you something, Mr. Ryan. You're talking about my boy.
That's what I want to know. Why do you think your son is above reproach? You think your son... Okay, I know
sir,
a lot of preachers
whose
daughters
right
and sons are on drugs. And a lot of them in my group, fathers are in the police force, and they have problems. What makes you think your son is above? If you smelled the marijuana, you think she was just smoking it by herself?
I think she provided it, and I'll tell you why. Because she's got more places to hide it.
Well, you're talking about hiding and providing, but it's your son and her in a car, you busted them, and marijuana's in there. And you're telling me you don't think, I bet you if you gave your son a drug test, he'd fail.
Oh, I have no doubt, sir, that my son partook. I wanted to find out who provided the drug. Now, with all due respect, you're in Las Vegas, Nevada, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
All right, you're out in a high desert wind tonight, because I can hear the wind whiff, you know.
Yeah, I'm out here on the porch. I smoke outside my cigars because I don't let my kids smell the smoke.
All right, that's terrific. But you're in a high desert wind.
Yes, sir.
That dries the area out, correct?
Right.
All right. Do you feel that you are assessing the situation properly?
What does that mean?
I don't understand
no,
that.
No, I'm saying the man's out in a high, he's out in a high dry wind.
And what does that
mean? Is Scott there? Are you there, sir?
Yeah.
All right. What is your name, sir? Mark or Scott? I'm sorry.
His name is Mark.
William Andrews.
All right, I'm very sorry, sir. Do you feel you're assessing properly given the high, dry wind you're in?
Yes. What does being outside in the wind have to do with my assessing what I'm listening
what does
to
that
on
mean?
The radio?
Well, I mean, I think anybody reasonably would say that the man lives in a climate where people are looking to escape, not only because of human factors, but climatological factors. He's out in a very dry heat, assessing matters of life and death.
I'm in a dry heat because I've had several back surgeries and
right.
for my health reasons.
Well, now there's a wind blowing too.
So what was Jay's point? The guy's brain was drying out on the high wind. Sir, you're out in a high, dry wind. Maybe you shouldn't be assessing the situation. Hey, I got to tell you, because I TiVo all kinds of crap. When I get home at night, what I do is I just look and see what the hell it is I want to watch, and then I just, you know, I crap can all the rest of this stuff. He'll go, I don't think I want to watch that. But I TiVo'd Birth of a Nation. You know this movie? Oh, my God, I've never laughed so hard in my life. Now, this... man... You know how this movie is considered to be like one of the greatest of all time? Look at any list of great movies. Birth of the Nation is on there. And it was made by this guy named D.W. Griffith. Well, it was a silent movie. Now, I understand in one respect why they thought it was so great, because the dude actually had huge battle scenes going on. I mean, he put a camera way up on top of a mountain, and I don't know how they did it, but I mean, he had this huge Civil War battle scene going on. I mean, it was looking like it was several hundred yards of all kinds of stuff, right? But there comes a point in the progression of man where white actors in blackface, sorry, just you're not going to, there's no dramatic effect any longer. It's just ha ha. So the guy, because I don't know, he didn't want to hire black actors or whatever. He had all kinds of white folks in blackface. He had some guy with the white lip thing. Some of these guys that he hired looked like black guy. I mean, he darkened their face up with the shoe polish, and they looked like black guys because they were white guys who kind of had maybe, I don't know, like almost a black guy face. But you could tell they were white guys. Because, and the giveaway is the color of the eyes. If you look at even an old silent movie like that, if you look at a black guy in an old movie, his eyes are still really dark. A white guy's eyes go boo. They're like vampire eyes. So put shoe polish on his face. Doesn't make any difference. When he opens his eyes, it's like, wee, Al Jolson time. So I'm watching this movie, and they had one actress who was playing a black maid in this southern plantation. This is Birth of the Nation, 1915. Somebody messed up with the makeup on her. I mean, what's it take? Just if you want to make her look black, I guess what they said, just go ahead and, all right, darken it up. Let's go. Come on, come on. Well, they missed like a corner of her face, so it was the stupidest looking thing I ever saw in my life. And the woman, the actress is trying to get all, she's trying to act like some Aunt Jemima or something. She's all, oh my, you know. Then they had a guy who was the butler, a white guy in blackface with the white lip thing. You know that white?
She should have just hired black actors. It would have been cheaper.
Oh, yeah, well, there you go, bud, yeah.
But D.W. Griffith, what a jackass.
He hired all those white guys. It cost him too much. The only time I saw real black actors is in the scene where, yeah, okay, here we go. Because you got to understand, Birth of a Nation is like this, it's a film that basically is trying to say that the South got screwed. And so what they do is, because he was pro-South, I guess. So when they show the black Union soldiers coming in and burning everything, naturally those are real black actors. You know, here they are, these lousy apes coming in and burning our land, and these are real black guys. But the dudes that with the black face, I thought I was gonna strangle. I was laughing so hard. So I looked at that, and then the only other movie I said it was even funnier was Henry, Diary of a Serial Murderer. And that was hysterical, especially at the very end after he falls in love with this chick. The last scene of the movie is he just leaves a suitcase by the side of the road. Her body parts are in it. Huh? Man, I gotta start taking walks. Doing something else when I get home. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
Good old phone call. That's a cow, bud. I want the phone call, not the cow.
Oh, I thought you were kidding.
I'm not kidding. Give me a phone call. Mavis, hi. How are you, hon? Mavis, go ahead.
Yeah, I stay here. I love your program. I listen to you every night when I come home from my walk. I love you very much.
Thank you, hon. What can I do for you?
This is a terribly, terribly sensitive thing for me to bring up, but I want to bring it up. Don't you think that it's time that these black quarterbacks, they're just not getting it done, you know, that we go back to white men?
What is that?
I'm talking about black quarterbacks.
Black quarterbacks?
Yes, honey. Don't you think that the white quarterback is better?
I don't know that that's the case.
Well, I think,
Are you, can I ask you, are you African-American?
Yes, I am. I'm very much African-American, and I also would say this, that I love my people very much. But I'm also a very big football fan. I followed Rams when they played at the L.A. Coliseum. I used to sell a program out at the L.A. Coliseum for the Rams, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I'd go to all the games. I followed all the games when Dick Enberg and everyone did it on the radio, you know.
Yeah, I remember those days.
All right. But I have to be honest. I'm so sick and tired of seeing these brothers go out there and act like a jackball. Can't pass a ball. Michael Vick. And do you read what Michael Vick said? He's going to go back to scrambling. That's great. Now he's going to get his leg broken in six places. What's he going to look like scrambling with one leg shorter than the other?
Well, do you have a cold?
Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that. I do not believe that it's a function of black quarterbacks necessarily. I think a lot of black quarterbacks scramble because they want to keep that job so bad, and so they feel like they have to make everything happen.
Oh, that's a load. You can't buy it. A lot of Negro trying to talk you into that.
I swear to God, that's what I think it is. I think a lot of black quarterbacks feel that they're not going to be able to keep the job unless they can do it all, and so they do develop that tendency to want to run out of the pocket.
No, Michael Vick is never going to win a Super Bowl as long as he's scrambling around back there like someone shoved hot coal in the back of his pants. He run around and run around. And you know what's going to happen. Every time he scrambles, he get injured.
No, I don't disagree with that. I mean, I think Michael Vick has to learn how to... I can't believe I'm talking football with a...
With some dried-up old lady?
No, I mean...
And the other one, did you read about his brother, Marcus Vick?
I did not.
Well, he's as crazy as a crap house rat. He stepped on a man's leg, stepped on a man's face. You hear about that, didn't you?
No. Marcus Vick stepped on a man's face?
He stepped right on a man's face. The man in a football game tackled him, and Marcus Vick got so upset, he said, well, we won't have any more of that now, will we? And he shoved a cleat right down in a man's face. Guys dotted eyes. So I'm so sick and tired of looking at these brothers running around back there like damn chicken. I just sawed his head off, you know, like every time when I grew up on a ranch, you know, the chicken would say, you're coming to Al-Qaeda now. You know.
The chickens would what?
The chicken, oh, look at you, come out back. Here come Al-Qaeda now.
Here comes Al-Qaeda. Oh, God.
Yeah, that's right. Because they think I'm on a videotape hacking off their head and then sending on back to, you know, where their chicken. Sending on back to the coop they come from.
Hello.
Yes. I'm here. So.
No, but I just think that Michael Vick, Mark, all these new style Negroes, I don't like it at all, you know. And I think that brothers, if they could take a tip from Brett Favre, man, that man got class. You know, he's standing back there. He'd take a punishment, you know.
No, I personally believe that traditionally. The very best athlete in a lot of these schools that were all black schools, the best athlete became the quarterback. He was the fastest guy, best arm. And I think these guys get drafted, and I think they feel like they got to do it all. They're going to lose their job, you know.
Well, what about Doug Williams?
Doug Williams was a great pocket passer, you know. But most of the guys that come up, Donovan McNabb, Randall Cunningham, I mean, all these guys, great arms, but they do want to kind of take off sometimes because they feel like they have to do it all.
Well, I tell you what, you can't do it all when a man crippled you so bad one leg shorter than the other. Now, I'd love to ask Michael Vick, how the hell you think you're going to look running down the field just going, you know, your body tilting with a short leg, with a leg half foot shorter than the other leg?
Well, I don't know. So your point is what?
My point is simply this. I think that they should go back to segregating the races. Only all whites playing and all blacks in another league. That way I can go back to watching some good quarterback.
Have a nice night, okay?
Well, you racist.
There's a lady calling in about Michael Vick. He's going to run around with one leg shorter than the other. She ain't wrong about that.
You know, Phil, Michael Vick eats so much chicken, he think he is one.
All right, thank you. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back, 1-800-449-8686.
Don't forget, we're going to have a flashback week or a flashback night coming up, a couple of weeks of phone calls before our last broadcast, June the 23rd, baby. And then, that's it. Out of radio. And, you know, I was talking to my wife about it this weekend, and, you know, friends have been weighing in. And you know, I kind of half-jokingly referred to it at the beginning of the hour, but, well, you're going to come back to the... No, I'm not, man. No, I'm not. Believe me, please. I know you don't have to believe me. There is no way I'm ever coming back to the radio business. See, the only way that you can make a decision and stick with it is when you don't give yourself any alternative, that you have to push forward. And I used to think, when I was the first 16 years of my career, it seems like a long time to waste your time, but that's what I did. From the time I was about 19 years old when I first got into radio until I was, you know, 36, I was a disc jockey, and I wasn't a very good one. I just played the hits, man. But because I had a pretty good set of pipes, you know, voice, and I could make the, you know, do the one-liners. And they liked me, and so I did that. And then when I finally got into the talk radio business, I thought, well, now I've found it. This is it. This is it. This is what I was meant to do, and I'm just going to do it, right? Well, it's funny how life has a way of pushing you in directions that you didn't, you know, you didn't consider, because I have done for 16 years this radio show in every possible way that I can think to do it. I have discarded certain things that I didn't think were worthy. I've emphasized other things that I thought we did well. I tried to always try to take the show, and I always had one thing in mind. Always do something that makes you nervous. Do one thing a week that makes you a little bit nervous. At least one thing a week. Because that way you stay on top of it. It doesn't have to be anything big. It could just be like a piece of material, or go someplace with a piece of material that others would not go to. But I never thought that I had anywhere else to go in the entertainment business when I finally found this radio show, because I have loved doing this show. And as I said, we've done it every possible way that we can do it, and we've done it well. We're very proud of the work we've done. But as it turned out, I have somewhere else to go. I have something else to do, and that is to take these characters and put them in front of a camera, if we can, or at least animate them, or do something like that for a visual medium. And so as not to repeat my experience in radio, because there is absolutely no other gig I could have. There's not a job left in radio that I want to do. Unless, I'll tell you what, if somebody would let me be an alter, like if I could create an alter ego like Jim Speed, a sports host, like I would be Jim Speed, a sports host with, you know, but I could just do it. And in other words, that's the only character every day. It would be Jim Speed, and I would be doing a sports show, but maybe I'd have like a methamphetamine problem, just a little quirk going on. And I could just play that character and take calls, you know, but even that would get old after a while. Screw it. No, I gotta get out from behind a microphone, man. That's all there is to it. So the 23rd is the last day. Will I miss it? Yeah. But am I going to be doing something else? Yeah. And I mean, you know, in other words, I'll be getting my rocks off in another way, if you'll pardon the expression, in ways that I never, honest to God, thought I would. I mean, I didn't want to be in television, but the fact is the crap that I do on the radio is better suited for TV than it is for radio. There, that's the bottom line. Better suited for TV than it is for radio. And that will be forever my slogan. Phil Hendry.
Better on TV than he was on radio. Better paid on TV than he was on radio. Phil Hendry, next.
On the Discovery Channel. And I'll join up with Steve Irwin, and we'll go down, and it's Crocodile Hunter with Steve Irwin and Phil Hendry. Today, we're going to pull the arms of a woman out of a... Oh, Jesus, we really have to do that? Hi, I'm Phil Hendry. With me is Steve Irwin, and we're going to go down to Crocodile Country here in Florida. And, oh, man, what are you doing with your baby, Steve? No, it's all right. Don't feed the baby to the gator! Steve Irwin feeds child to gator. Ratings hit all-time high. So that's what's going to be happening. Now, I just want you to know something. Not that I have to say this, but, you know, this is just a freaking radio show, and I'm under no illusion, man. When I go off the air on the 23rd, it'll take about 30 days. People will forget that I was ever alive. That's just the way it is, period. Opie and Anthony, remember how hot they were? They went off the air, man. No one cared whether they lived or died until Infinity realized they made more money with them than without them and rehired them. But anyway... Which, take heart, Star and Buck Wild. You guys will be back with Emmis. Don't worry about it, man. There's a reason they were paying you $5 million a year, baby. Oh, yeah, you'll be back. Don't worry about it. You just got to do your penance. You know, they'll make all the noises like they usually do about how, oh, goodness gracious, how outrageous that he said the things that he said. I give it about a year and a half, man. You'll be right back in the saddle again. Don't you worry about a thing. You know what? They know which side of the bread the freaking butter and cream cheese is on. But for me, I'll just, you know, fade away, man. And that's cool because then we'll move off into some other crap. Probably the next time you see me, you'll be watching like a TV show and there'll be like a crazed miner coming out of a tunnel with no teeth. That'll be me. It'll be a Western. So I say that to say that we are going to be having the periodic flashback night. And we are going to take phone calls from people the final 2 weeks of the show to say goodbye to you. And then one other thing, our website will be forevermore the one place where you can connect with all the things that we're doing, the Phil Hendry Show website. So if you have not been a longtime listener, but you're just joining the show late, you can still check out our website. It's www.philhendryshow.com. All of the archive stuff is there. I just found out what happened, all that tape stuff. Remember I was asking about? It's on the fourth floor. 5 years worth of stuff, and last Friday, nobody knew where it was. So that is going to be in my possession. I may have to steal it, but... So our website is www.philhendryshow.com, and be sure to get your backstage pass. Don't cancel, baby, because it's going to be there. All right, we'll be right back with some final thoughts. We have some news to look into, and also a visit, I believe... From Lloyd Bonafide, if I'm not mistaken, on the Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
Yes, sir, go ahead.
Yes, sir, the coffee kiosk that is near where my business used to be is operated by some South Americans, and I complained to the city... On the part.
You're on the air right now, sir.
Okay.
Go ahead.
The coffee kiosk that is near where my office formerly was is operated by some South Americans who think it's funny to fart in the...
Who think it's funny to what?
What's that?
Who think it's funny to what?
What they do is fart into the cup before they pour the latte, sir. Well, you may laugh, sir, but I have told them repeatedly, you think it's funny to break gas into my cup.
What are you talking about, man? Tell me what...
Well, let me tell you what I'm talking about, man. I'm talking about some South Americans that cut wind into my latte cup.
Before they pour it in, what do you? In other words, how do you know they're doing that?
How do I know they're doing that? Because when I take a sip of that latte, it smells like butt. That's how I know, like a man's butt.
You know, there's one other solution for that.
No, no, wait, no, hold on for a minute. There's
no, there's one. There's another reason why it may smell like that.
What are you? I spoke to Bill Germain over at the city council about these South Americans queefing into a latte cup, and I.
Will you come on, man, and listen to me?
Well, Mister, you
hold on. First of all, a latte has a lot of foam milk in it.
Yes, 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 I know. I've got the espresso maker at home. So, your point is?
The point is this. If you operate one of those coffee stands, right, and you're making latte after latte all day long, you got to rinse that thing out all the time. If you leave any milk at the bottom, it sours. And hence, at the end of the day, and generally this will happen toward the end of the day, they'll pour a latte and some of that sour milk drumps gets in there. And, yeah, it smells very foul.
You know, it's all very neat and tidy the way you just said that, Mr. Henry. But I'm telling you, I detected kind of plantain gas. That's all I... And that's why...
Plantain gas, huh?
Yeah, well, I guess that blows your theory, huh?
No, sir, it doesn't. It's sour milk. That's what's doing it.
Jesus, I hate your show.